Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, joined by longtime basketball and football beat reporter Jim Polzine. We got lots of stuff to get into today. Basketball is coming down the pike, 1 week away from games starting, allegedly, hopefully. Football is in full swing. We got a huge matchup with Northwestern coming up on Saturday. Jim and I are both going to be there. So give you a quick rundown of the show today. We're going to get into the Northwestern game, the offensive freshman getting big run against Michigan last week and what that can mean for the Northwestern game this week, how this defense is looking, and then, you know, what they can do against this improved Northwestern offense. And then I think this is one of the best coaching battles that we're going to see on the Wisconsin schedule this year. There is so much, not only mutual respect, but so much mutual talent between these teams on the coaching ranks. That we're gonna talk about, but I'm very excited to see how these teams kind of match up, because as we've been hearing all week, Jim, in these press conferences, everybody knows it's gonna be a smash mouth game, and when you both know it coming in that your identity is physical play, it just kind of creates a fun game, and maybe not fun for fans because they were rooting for Wisconsin, but fun to watch in the struggle there.
Yeah, it's always kind of, I don't know, ugly is probably the wrong word to use, but it's always that type of game where just nothing comes easy. And especially in Evanston, where it's always, it seems to be always gloomy. And
it's going to be this week. It's supposed to rain.
That's what I heard. Yeah. So, I mean, that's only natural that would happen. I'm expecting a, you know, we're going to get into picks later, but I'm expecting a hard fought, close game.
Yeah, for sure. And then we're going to wrap up the show, too, talking about basketball. Like I mentioned, game's supposed to start next week. Hopefully get a schedule by the time you guys hear this podcast on Thursday. Jim's getting ready for what should be not only exciting basketball season for the Badgers, but for the whole Big Ten. So we'll get into all of that right after this. All right, we're going to start off with the offense against this Northwestern defense. Badgers fans know anytime they play Northwestern, it's always a slog. We were talking about in the intro there, but just – always a tough game to get the ball moving on the ground and to score points. But I think there's some encouraging signs from this Badger run game that we can take from the Michigan game and kind of project them forward. 300 and some odd yards against Michigan. They had to change up the offensive line because of COVID-19. Josh Seltzner, the left guard, was out. Moved John Dietzen from right guard to left guard, moved Logan Bruss from right tackle to right guard, and then moved Tyler Beach into the starting right tackle spot. And Jim, I got to ask, as I watched that game twice now, was that line better than what the starting line against Illinois was? I kind of felt like they performed better, at least. Maybe not just pure talent, but I think they performed better at Michigan than they did against Illinois.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I do wonder whether that's their best five. And I know there was – the coaches talked about John Dietzen kind of not wanting to put too much on his plate that first game and to leave him at right guard. But I think if you go by experience, Beach and Bruss have, and Dietzen have way more experience than, you know, Seltzner. So maybe that's the five they settle on, knowing that you can have a guy like Seltzer that can come in and give you reps, give you time if you need it. And it remains to be seen. And then, you know, the thing I always hesitate to on is scheme. Sure. We know that Michigan was without two of its best defensive linemen. We know Lovie Smith has a history of being really stout against the run, against Wisconsin. So, you know, it wasn't something Illinois was doing in that opener, as opposed to something Michigan wasn't doing in that game last weekend. I don't know. But yeah, it certainly seemed like it flowed better. And I think part of that too was the kind of the creativity the coaching staff showed in how they wanted to attack the boundary and which set up some stuff up the middle for Wisconsin. So I just thought it was a really creative game plan. And I suppose they had a lot of time to prepare for that game.
You know, yeah, right.
maybe that's part of it, but I thought they did a really good job. I'm kicking myself all week. You know, we hand out those little mini awards, the breakout pieces from our game. And I gave the game ball to Scott Nelson because I was just kind of rushing through it Saturday night. I really should have given it to Paul Christ and his staff. I think they did a tremendous job of getting this team through this ordeal And really, I thought it was a great coaching job Saturday night. You know, Michigan, you can say what you want about Michigan. They're not a good team, but it was a really fluid and efficient attack on Saturday night. And you would never know that this team didn't play in 2 weeks. And so I thought kudos to Paul Chryst and his staff, Joe Rudolph and those guys too, Jim Leonard. They were really on top of their game and it showed.
Yeah. And Kirk Herbstreit actually kind of said on the broadcast, he said the Wisconsin doesn't run plays, they run concepts. And they kind of struck a chord with me because I'm like, yeah, it really was what they're doing against Michigan is they figured out, hey, they can't defend our run to the left side on the perimeter, especially. Let's window dress, let's move stuff around, put guys in motion. But then right before the ball snap, it's going to be the same play that you guys have seen six times. You just don't know how to stop it yet. And then off of that, they can create so much action with the play action and then throwing the ball downfield off of that. So I think you're totally right on that. And that this coaching staff seems to be not only figuring out their opponent, what's going to work best for them against them, but then just figuring out what positions to put their own players in. And that's going to be really important against this Northwestern team because they've got a little bit of a different body makeup on the defensive line. They got huge dudes on the defensive line. I was doing the math. They're averaging like 6'3", 310 on their D-line. So, I mean, it's not going to be quite the same look that Michigan was trying to give where they got a little more speed on the outside, some smaller guys that Wisconsin was able to move off the ball. And then as we've seen over the years, Northwestern's defensive line always seems to be able to hold up the offensive line just enough that they can't get to that second level and get some of those bigger run plays to happen. So it's always going to be those 3-4 yard gains and you have to string those together. And that's kind of what makes Northwestern the challenge that it is every year for Wisconsin.
Yeah. And that Northwestern, like you look at Northwestern's defense, that the D line was supposed to be kind of the weakness going into the season. Joe Gaziano was a longtime defensive end who's really good. I cannot think of the defensive tackle that they lost to, a really good defensive tackle. I wrote in my story this week, and I can't remember his name. But anyways, the two starters they lost were on the defensive front. So that was kind of the question mark going in. And from the sounds of it, you know, I haven't seen every minute of their games, but Pat Fitzgerald's been really happy with that crew because the back seven is terrific, and especially the linebackers. They have 3 senior linebackers. Patty Fisher seems like he's been there forever. It seems like every preview I write every year, he's been in it for like 10 years. Blake Gallagher's a really good player. So their secondary is really good, and they found some young guys to even add more depth back there. So this is a really good defense coordinated by Mike Hankwitz, who Badger fans clearly know. He was a coordinator here for 2 years when Brett Bielema was the coach, his first 2 years of coach. Hankwitz is a really smart guy. I did a story on him way back in 06, 07. They called him the professor back then because it would be 10:30 at night, players and coaches would be trickling out, and there would be Mike Hankwitz in his office with a light on and just kind of going over film, going over concepts and schemes. And he was just a guy that from a preparation standpoint was really, really good and smart. And he's done a really good job now at Northwestern. I mean, Pat Fitzgerald and him have been together a long time now. And it's he always seems to give Wisconsin problems. And I think part of that is he knows this Wisconsin offense from going against it for 2 years in practice. So that's not surprised that it's not surprised that he makes it difficult on Wisconsin.
Right. One of the guys that kind of popped against Michigan, Jalen Berger, obviously a ton of hype on him coming in as a 4-star recruit and in a backfield that seemed to be lacking, you know, that one kind of star guy that you've become accustomed to for the Badgers. When you watch that game over again, I just think that Jalen Berger going forward gives them the best blend of all the things that they said, you know, maybe Isaac Garendo could give them or Nakia Watson gives them. I feel like Jalen Berger puts all that together. And I mean, Paul Chryst said it in our Monday press conference that he's earned the right for more opportunities once, you know, those guys start coming back. Garrett Groshek and Garendo were both out part of the COVID outbreak against Michigan. We'll see when they're allowed to come back. But once that whole group is healthy again, I just can't see a way you can deny what Jalen Berger brings to you. And I think that starts this weekend because I think he's going to be important to challenge those linebackers, not only on the edge, but in the passing game too. That was something they didn't need to do against Michigan, but I think in this game where it's going to be tough to run the ball, getting him out of the backfield and hopefully one-on-one against some of these linebackers is going to be a big advantage for Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think the one thing that it jumped out to me from that game is the one thing he has that the other three guys don't have is wiggle, right? Yeah. Is that probably the best way? I like those other three guys. They're all a little bit different. Grando's, you know, got great speed. Watson's a great between the tackle guy. Groshek is just so smart and tough and can do everything. But Berger adds a different element, and that's the ability to kind of make you miss and wiggle and get out in space and make something happen and turn, you know, a 4 or 5 yard gain into a 12 yard gain and a 10 yard gain into a 20 possibly. And I think that's something that this offense has always had and needs. And so I'm curious to see how they work out the distribution for four guys, but I think at least he did enough in that game to, like you said, to earn more. And I think he gained some trust from the coaches. And so I think we're going to see more of him. You know, that was the one thing I thought that was a surprise the other night is how much they incorporated him into the passing game right off the bat, yeah. Right? His first touch was a catch.
Yeah.
Right. I love that. And that's great. That just it makes him so much more dangerous if you can get him out on the boundary and get him in one-on-one situations. So I think that was a huge, that was Chim Dike, his contribution. Those are kind of the biggest takeaways from that game.
Yeah. And I think, part of it, I mean, it worked all night for Wisconsin, was getting the ball out in the flat quickly. You know, Ferguson had a couple of big gains on that. Berger had a couple of catches like that as well. So maybe Northwestern doesn't give that up like Michigan was, but I still think you get Berger the ball on the edge in some space against these linebackers. And as good as they are, they don't have the speed, they don't have the agility to keep up with a guy like Jalen Berger. So I think that's something that Wisconsin's got to exploit going up here. But talking about the passing game a little bit, you look at last week, Graham Mertz, understandably, only coming off a couple of days of practice, was a little bit rusty, but he was still the far and away the best quarterback on the field. And you go back and you watch it again, like the stats were, you know, 120 some odd yards, 12 completions, but a couple of drops that would have been big gainers, probably pushes him up to 220, 230. So I just think when you look at this Northwestern defense against Graham Mertz, they've got 8 interceptions, which looks awesome in 4 games, but you got to kind of put it in context. There are 3 against Maryland in the opener where Tagovailoa really didn't seem to know what he was doing. That's a little bit different now. 3 against Iowa, and a lot of those, or 2 of them were late in the game when they're just chucking it up, trying to come back. And then you had 2 against Nebraska, whose quarterback situation's been, you know, what it has been. So I think that Mertz against this Northwestern pass defense is an advantage with for Wisconsin, A, but then B, like probably his first big test, because this is probably the best secondary that he's faced so far in his college career.
Yeah, I agree. He didn't want to admit he was rusty last week, but I think that was the case. I just thought watching that game again early on, a couple of his passes were just off. I just thought his timing was off and his accuracy was a little bit off. And then he made a couple shaky decisions. There was one where he kind of threw back against the grain.
Yeah,
I'm sure kind of caused some gas on the sidelines. And you know, again, the thing we have to remember is he's a redshirt freshman who's making his second career start. Mm-hmm. He's going to get so much better. He's already good. He's going to get so much better, and he's going to clean up a lot of that stuff. I thought he was good. I thought he did what he had to do the other night. 12 of 22 probably should have been 15 of 22 if those 3 drops don't happen. And then, you know, those numbers look a lot better if that doesn't happen. So mm-hmm. I thought he was good. I think he's probably gonna have to be, you know, above average to really good on Saturday against Northwestern. I think they're, you know, like you said earlier, they make things in the running game tough. So you're going to end up in a lot of 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4 situations where you're going to have to move the chains by passing the ball. And so it's going to be, you know, goes without saying, but this is going to be his biggest test to date. And we'll see how he performs.
Yeah. And you mentioned it earlier, and this is kind of my big key for the offense this week, is being creative in the run game, because I don't think that you're going to be able to line up in the eye and pound the ball against Northwestern and have much success. They were able to do that against Illinois and Michigan pretty well. And they're using their fullbacks. We wrote about it on Madison.com this week. They're using their fullbacks on half their plays, being very effective, using them in different ways. But I think that you're going to have to do some different things in the run game. Some of those jet sweeps. I really like that jet sweep reverse, the play that Chim Dike made That was actually his first touch, I believe, that 30-yard run that he had. Because that it just it puts something else in the defense's mind that even if it makes them hesitate for a split second, that's that split second that gets you the advantage as an offense. So I think you mentioned it before, Jim, but this the creativity in the run game, doing enough to get on the edge and confuse a defense even just a little bit is going to be really important for Wisconsin to be able to be effective on the ground and then not rely entirely on Mertz in the passing game.
Yeah, because you need some chunk plays, right? I mean, this Northwestern defense is kind of built to make you ground and pound and eventually make a mistake. And, you know, it's tough to put together 15, 16 play drives against this team. So you need some chunk plays. And they got just enough of them the other night, I thought. You'd like to see more of them ground, you know, rushing and passing, you know, and that's why I think it was important to have guys like Berger and DK get a taste of it and get some experience. And that's only going to help going forward. They've got some guys to complement Davis and Pryor and Ferguson. And that's big. That was one of my big question marks coming into the season was, do they have enough playmakers with Jonathan Taylor and Quintez Cephas gone? And so far so good.
Yeah. And it's funny because as good as Danny Davis looked running the ball, that was probably his toughest game as a receiver that I remember, maybe since like the 2018 season. The two drops that he had, one was just a straight up drop, and then the other one was he caught a slant and probably fumbled. I thought he got a generous call from the refs on that one, that it wasn't that got overturned to an incomplete pass. But it was just kind of one of those weird games where your arguably number one receiver is a better rusher than he was a receiver in that one. But I just think that he's going to be important this week too, because just physically, speed wise and size wise, I think that he's going to be their best deep option, because Northwestern's got good defensive backs, like we mentioned, but I don't know if they have somebody that can keep up with him down the field. So I think he's a guy to look out for as well for another big game. And I also feel like Paul Chris and the Wisconsin staff do a good job when a guy has a mistake or a struggle, that they try to give him a kind of a bounce back play or a bounce back game to get his confidence back. So I think that factors in there as well.
That's a good point. You know, the thing I loved the other night was, you know, and you're covering the game there and I'm covering it here. And so we have this, you know, we have the stats program up ahead of us that kind of gives us the play-by-play and stuff like that. Just watching who was the leading rusher throughout that game. If you go to that game and someone asked you who's going to be Wisconsin's leading rusher, it probably would have guessed Watson, right?
Probably, yeah.
Right. Well, it ended up being Jalen Berger, followed by John Chanel, and then Danny Davis ties with Watson for third. It was like watching watching that battle kind of play out through the game was just fascinating to me, just because how many different options they used and were successful. It's just going forward, like we talked about Hankwitz before, but he's got to be pulling out his hair this week, not really knowing where this offense is going to go next. And it's certainly not predictable. That's that only bodes well for Wisconsin.
For sure. Well, let's jump over to the other side of the ball here, Jim, looking at this defense. And you wrote about it for this paper this morning. Northwestern's offense has vastly improved. Granted, they were literally the worst passing offense in Division I college football. Only way to, change was to go up. But Peyton Ramsey, the Indiana transfer at quarterback, has brought some, solidified that position for them. Just giving them competency, and that's enough for what they want to do offensively. I just think that when you look at a guy like Peyton Ramsey and what they're doing in their new offense, how do you say this guy's last name? I've listened to it. The offensive coordinators, Mike.
I don't know. As I was writing it, I thought it was Bahakian.
Bahakian, all right.
I turned the J into an H. I don't know. That's more Spanish. I don't know if that's accurate. It might be Bajakian, but whatever. Either way. I like writing and not talking.
Yeah, same. But I think they've really kind of transformed this offense and livened it up a little bit more to, you see them go up tempo pretty much every time they get a first down. They are using their running backs really well. I think this is going to be a challenge for Wisconsin, mostly because they're not as dependent on one-ish guy like the first two opponents they've had are. Illinois is really Josh Madarbebe, a little bit of their running backs, but then Michigan is Joe Milton entirely. So I think this team going to challenge them a little bit more with spreading the ball around and you can't lock in on one guy.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, the offensive coordinator, I'm not going to say his name, deserves a lot of credit. I don't want to take away from what he's doing, but the one thing he's got that Mick McCall, the last offensive coordinator, didn't have was, first of all, healthy running backs. I mean, Isaiah Bowser getting hurt early last season was less than ideal for Northwestern because it just took away one experienced playmaker. And now the combination of Bowser and Drake Anderson is a pretty solid duo at tailback. And then, like you said, Peyton Ramsey hasn't been outstanding, but he's just, you know who your starting quarterback is going to be every week. And that's something Northwestern didn't know last week. They couldn't trust any of the four guys they put back there. And they just, you couldn't get anything done through the air. And now you at least have that ability. The other night at Purdue, when the running game wasn't working, 80 yards on 40 carries, they could turn to Ramsey to get things done through the air. They really needed him to complete some big passes. And he did, you know, he threw for like 230 yards, which is, again, it's not going to jump off the page at you, but it's enough to win with this defense Northwestern has. It's enough to win. It's giving them a chance. And so that's huge. And they always seem to have, you know, it's Northwestern. They have smart players. And that's one thing that's allowed them to kind of keep games with Wisconsin close is their offense is built around smart players executing a game plan. And I see no different this year. It's just, they know what they want to do. They know who they are. And having Ramsey, experienced guy back there, has just given them a chance.
Yeah, and it's funny. You think about how bad Northwestern's offense was statistically last year, but against Wisconsin, that still took a defensive touchdown to really put that game away and multiple turnovers that the defense forced to, keep it that way because Northwestern was still being, you know, pretty effective. That just shows us how tight this rivalry is. And I think you look at this secondary and the matchup there with Peyton Ramsey is that Ramsey is a guy that he struggled a little bit with the turnovers in the last couple of weeks, but just in general, he's pretty smart with the ball. He doesn't put it in too many bad areas. And that's kind of a challenge to the secondary because they've been feasting off, you know, a tip ball against Michigan for an interception. Then, you know, Milton throws it right to Chanel for another interception. But I mean, they've been feasting off these turnovers and I think Northwestern's really centered around, like, we're not going to beat ourselves like that. You got to beat us. If you're going to beat us, you have to beat us, you know, with your stuff as opposed to us making a mistake. And that's something I think this defense is going to have to show that it's not just about creating turnovers. They're going to continue to get off the field on third down, things like that, against a team that's not going to help them out as much as their other opponents have.
Right. You're writing about this week, the pass rush.
Yeah, today.
Not to give away the story, but what is your take on Wisconsin's pass rush? The sack numbers aren't where they want them to be. Do you think they're getting enough pressure without, you know, you can be happy with a pass rush, even if you're not getting sacks. It can be doing its job without getting sacks. How would you assess where they're at on that side of the ball right now, or on that aspect of the game?
Yeah, I think it's solid. I think give Nick Herbig a couple more games under his belt and some of these numbers are going to start jumping up more. One of the things I actually was just writing it before we jumped on the Zoom here was that both Brandon Peters and Joe Milton turned what should have been sacks into rushes for 0 yards or 1 yard just because they're mobile guys and they're smart enough to get out of the way when, or at least just, you know, make a negative play not as bad. So I think that Wisconsin probably should have closer to 7 or 8 sacks, which would look, you know, a lot better. But yeah. I think the one thing that we heard all offseason, all preseason, was that this defensive line was going to be asked to do more pressure-wise. So far, it's just Isaiah Loudermilk on the D-line with a sack. I know Garrett Rand was obviously out last week against Michigan during due to COVID-19, and then Matt Henningsen gets hurt early on in the game. So that hurts. I mean, you're talking about two of your most experienced defensive linemen. And then Keanu Benton at nose has been dominant against the run. I mean, he's blowing up double teams and making tackles left and right. Hasn't been as effective in the pass rush, but I think partly because he's not always out there in nickel situations where it's, you know, more often going to be passed. So I think going forward here, I think the sack rate and those numbers are going to start jumping up because of the experience level. And then I think a guy like Keanu Benton getting some more nickel reps is going to help as well.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know how it'll play out because Northwestern does like to get the ball out pretty quickly, right? I mean,
that's the thing. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So this is a game where pressure isn't going to be the sacks. It's going to be forcing bad throws, forcing throwaways, kind of not just getting sacks, but, you know, making the quarterback move and getting hits on the quarterback that's not going to result in the sack. Because you mentioned that obviously the speed which he gets the ball out, and then two, he's smart. Like there's just no doubt about Peyton Ramsey. I think he's only got 6 or 7 sacks taken so far this year, and they haven't played a great pass rush yet at Northwestern. And that's one of the things, and I'm not trying to nitpick. I mean, 4-0 is 4-0, and they're all Big Ten wins. But it hasn't been the toughest schedule yet so far. I mean, it's been all the West teams, and they haven't played anybody that's having a great season yet, at least to me. I mean, I'm not trying to knock Northwestern because it's a great start and everything like that, but this is by far their toughest test, and I think they're well aware of it as well.
Really their last one, though, too, right? If they get past this game.
Yeah, that's the thing. Let me check it real quick, but
they have Illinois.
Yeah, they have the nice
soda
crossover scheduling for them because they got Maryland and then Michigan State. So yeah, they have Michigan State, Minnesota, and Illinois left after Wisconsin. So this is basically the kitchen sink, throw everything at this game, because if you win, you pretty much win the West Division.
Yeah. Huh. That's crazy. I mean, to go from 1-8 to winning the division would be an incredible story.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I mentioned off the top, when I talk about this coaching matchup, Jim mentioned Mike Hankowitz, who's got the familiarity with both sides, obviously. But I just think you look at the way that Jim Leonard has got this defense playing. I don't know how many teams could lose two guys to the NFL that were as impactful as Chris Orr and Zach Bond were to this defense. Not only your two biggest leaders, your two most productive linebackers, but two guys that just knew what to do every play. And then not only that, replace them with guys who are inexperienced. We mentioned Herbig at the outside linebacker spot, a true freshman. And then Leo Chanel got some reps last year as a sophomore, but it didn't play a ton. And then really not skip a beat. Obviously, you've got experienced guys elsewhere, but this team has been even more impressive defensively than I thought they were going to be. And a lot of those guys credit Jim Leonard because they're saying, you know, we go into games knowing exactly what's going to happen. We know what we've got to do. And then it's just going out there and doing it.
Yeah. The caveat I would throw in there is that the opponents they played.
Sure.
I kind of hate that I just did that. Cause you know, I do that thoughts on the win, you know, that tweet after the game. And mm-hmm. a lot of people were like, well, it's Michigan and Michigan's terrible. And my counter to that is, yes, you're absolutely right. But you still won that game by 38 points.
Yeah, you dominated a bad team. That means you're good. You know.
Exactly. That's what you're supposed to do. And so I don't want to poo-poo what the defense has done against bad offenses. But I think it bears mentioning that they have not played a really good offense. And nor do I think they're necessarily going to play one until Indiana, probably, right? But that said, you're absolutely right. They've looked really dominant and they've found ways to fill those holes and find different playmakers. And I think, you know, the secondary has been fantastic so far. And just, you know, that group in particular has made a jump. And then, you know, the emergence of guys like Herbig has been really impressive. And they love playing for Jim Leonard. They really do. And they've said that over and over again. And I really do think he's a really smart coach. So it's not surprising that they're successful.
Right. And the thing that Paul Chryst, I think, does or kind of let on after the game was that the last 2 weeks, or last 3 weeks for the program, not only because of the game cancellations, but no practice and all the things they were going through. And let's just be honest, like they were getting kind of beat up nationally because of what was happening. I mean, there's a natural assumption that you did something wrong when an outbreak happens like it did. And, you know, we'll find out when the research comes back, you know, if they made a mistake like that or, you know, whatever ended up happening. But I think the way that they were able to bounce back from that, get back on the field, shake off the rust, and then look pretty much like they had just come off the Illinois game and just rolled right into the Michigan game without much of a change. That's a testament to Chryst and the coaching staff's not only ability to prepare a game plan, but then prepare your players and kind of get them over that hump of, you know, all that stuff that was going on outside of the football field.
You know, and I talked about this last week or maybe about a different podcast, how I thought continuity within the coaching staff was important. And I think this type of situation is shows why it's important. Those guys all trust each other. They all like each other. You're not breaking in new guys who aren't familiar with guys around them. It's a staff that's with the exception of Elvis Whitted, has been around each other for a couple of years now, and they work well together, whether it's in person or over Zoom. They're flexible. They're able to adjust. And I think that was important last week. I think they just kind of got through what they had to get through and prepared for the game. And, you know, again, Michigan's not good, but this Wisconsin team was pretty close to flawless. And I think that's a reflection of the coaching staff and their ability to prepare through what was, you know, not an ideal situation.
All right, let's jump over to our Big Ten picks here. And good Lord, I am bad this year. Jim is killing me, and it is bad. But we both went 2-4 last week. Jim is at 11-12-2 on the season. I'm at 8-15-2. Yikes.
That hurts. 11-12-2 is not exactly something to write home about, by the way.
Well, that's fair, too. But this is a big this will either separate us even more or bring us back to closer, because we only agree on one game this weekend.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, so let's
I might change one. I've never done this before, but can I change one mid?
Yeah, go for it.
We'll wait till I get to it, but we can start where you want to start.
All right, we'll start with the one that we actually agree on, and that is Iowa going to Penn State. Iowa is a 2.5-point favorite. That's a Saturday game. There is a big stink of quit on Penn State watching them. You watched that the Nebraska game last week, and Nebraska didn't play tremendously. They played well enough, but I mean, Penn State doesn't. I understand you lose two of your best players, but it seems like all these other guys that were supposed to be as great as a, you know, top 10 ranking before the season, especially on the lines, are just not showing up. And I think Iowa is the exact same or exact opposite, where a lot of question marks that they had, especially defensively, are starting to get answered, and they're playing pretty well. So I think they'll be able to go into Penn State and cover a field goal. So we're both on Iowa there.
Yeah, I watched that Penn State Nebraska game, and I'm just was surprised by it. Like you said, how little fight there was. There's still talent on that roster, and I cannot for the life of me figure out why things are going as poorly as they are. And Iowa's getting better. Like I think ahead, like, you know, I said the Indiana game's coming up for Wisconsin, and this game Saturday is certainly not going to be easy. But that last game at Iowa City is going to be tough, because I really do think Iowa's trending in the right direction and could be really good by the time Wisconsin, you know, gets there down in Iowa City in early December.
Right. All right. So jump back here to a Friday game. Purdue is going to Minnesota. Purdue is a 3-point favorite. I'm on Purdue and you're on Minnesota. I don't understand how it's so hard for Minnesota to get Rashad Bateman the ball. I know he's got a decent amount of catches so far, but when you look at the rest of that offense, it should look like the Packers, where pretty much every play is either Aaron Jones or Devontae Adams. That should be Minnesota, where it's Rashad Bateman and Ibrahim. And for whatever reason, they can't seem to get it figured out. And I think Purdue gets George Karlaftis back, which is a big help for the defensive line, hopefully slow down the run game there. So I think Purdue goes on the road and gets a win by three. So I'm on Purdue there.
Tanner Morgan,
big time regression.
Yeah, I mean, there was talk of him being a first round pick, which I always thought was a little bit ridiculous. But yeah, he's just a guy now. He's been very pedestrian this season, and that's another one that's hard to explain. I don't know. I don't know if it's like with Sean Clifford at Penn State too. I don't know if the lack of an offseason is hurting some of these guys. But you look at other guys, you know, it's not hurting Graham Mertz, right? I mean, he's been really good. So I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. I'm still going to take Minnesota just because I went on Purdue last week thinking that Rondell Moore was going to play. And now again, there's rumors this week that he's finally going to make his debut, but who knows? I'm taking the home team. That's my only reason here, is I'm taking the home team. I don't think Purdue's good enough to go win on the road.
That's fair. What children's book do you think PJ Flex got after getting housed by Iowa at home on a Friday night, where you beg for Friday games to get national TV and then you just get destroyed?
Yeah. It's ugly. What's even funnier is that the Jim Harbaugh exit rumors are flying high, and one of the possible replacements is PJ Fleck. And so I don't know how Michigan would deal with that. I feel like PJ Fleck probably is one of those guys that needs to only be somewhere for 4 or 5 years, because he's going to wear out his welcome, and he can move on and rebuild another program. So maybe that's a good time for him to go to Michigan. But it doesn't seem like he'd be a great fit for Michigan either. And I'm sure Wisconsin fans are happy that Minnesota's struggling and Michigan's struggling, but it's ugly both places.
It really is. All right, so getting into another Saturday game here. Michigan State is going to Maryland. Maryland is a 6.5-point favorite. We should caveat this. I don't think this game's getting played. It's got to get decided today. We're recording Wednesday morning. I don't believe it's getting played just from the way the reports out of Maryland. They haven't practiced yet this week.
Right, I was going to say that. They haven't practiced this week, which maybe should – like, I took Maryland in this game. I should probably rethink that, because if a team hasn't practiced for an entire week, you know, I guess Wisconsin was able to get around that and look good. But it's – for a team like Maryland that's young, it would seem not to be a great situation. But I think you're right. I don't think that game gets played. I think by the time people listen to this podcast, that game will have been called off.
Yeah, that was honestly the only reason I picked Michigan State, because I don't think they're very good either. But you said it really well. Their young team that's not practicing is not a good combination, because the Maryland hasn't been practicing since, I think it was last Thursday or Friday when they canceled the Ohio State game. So it's been a while, and we talk about the continuity and the things that gave Wisconsin advantages and ability to bounce back from that. Maryland doesn't have any of that. So if it gets played, I can't see them being able to cover.
Michigan State's bad, though. The thing is, Michigan State is terrible.
Which
makes that win at Michigan even more. That's rough. If they're going to win one game, I'm sure they're happy that it was that one. But wow, I mean, what does that say about Michigan that they lost to that team?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Indiana going to Ohio State. This is pretty much you could say Wisconsin Northwestern is one of the marquee games this week, but national perception wise, top 10 matchup there between Indiana and Ohio State. Ohio State is a 20.5-point favorite, and I am on Ohio State. You are in Indiana. Until Ohio State doesn't cover and doesn't prove that they're vastly superior to everyone they play, plus a week off, I'm going to ride the Buckeyes. What do you think about Indiana?
I just think they're going to be able to keep within 2 touchdowns. I don't think they're going to win this game. I don't know that they're even going to, you know, threaten necessarily. But 20.5 points was way too much for me. Even as good as Ohio State is, I just think Indiana's got enough scoring punch that they're going to put some points on the board. And their defense actually continues to impress me. I mean, we say that over and over, that's always been kind of the missing piece. They've been good on that side of the ball. And so I think they're going to at least stay within 2 touchdowns. Like I said, Ohio State wins this game, but I don't think it's a 3-touchdown win.
That's fair. My thing was, I did not like how Michael Penix played against Michigan State. I think he had 2 picks against a bad Michigan State defense, and then had a couple other ones that could have been picked as well. Just kind of loose with the ball. And I think I think that week off is a big help, because I mean, basically since last Wednesday, they've been able to prepare for Indiana. I just think that A, you've got that going for you. We have the extra rest, and then B, Ohio State knows that this is basically their only good game on the schedule, and they need some style points, I think, to ensure that if they win the Big Ten championship, as they're favored to do, that they'll get in the college football playoff. This is a game that, even if, let's say, they're up 14 or 20 late, that they punch in another one to cover. So I've got Ohio State.
That's fair.
So another Saturday game, Illinois going to Nebraska. Nebraska is a 16-point favorite, which is crazy. That's a lot of points, but I'm still going with Nebraska, and here's why. Illinois stinks, and Scott Frost hasn't had an ability to run up the score on anybody, and if he gets it, he will take it.
That's actually really sound reasoning. I didn't think of it that way. I saw 16 points and didn't think of a possible way where that average of a team could win by that many points. That was my only reasoning. The only thing here that I'm kind of second guessing myself is that Brandon Peters might be back.
Yeah.
And I actually think they might be better without him at quarterback. I think
Corey Williams Taylor's was, good.
Yeah. Well, and didn't Williams?
Oh, yeah. And play? Williams, excuse me. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Williams had like 31 carries last week for like 190 yards. So I'm just wondering if the Brandon Peters experiment should be over and go to the younger guys and see what they do and build for the future. But who knows?
My other part with Nebraska is at the end of the day, yes, like they have that spread offense, but they would rather run the ball out of that spread more often than not. And the way that Illinois has run defense, I mean, they got demolished by Minnesota, who we mentioned their struggles. That run defense, I mean, they did decently against Wisconsin, but I think Wisconsin was also a factor of like, well, they can't stop the pass, so let's not beat our heads against the wall. So I think Nebraska finally made the right choice and has McCaffrey in there at quarterback. I think he's better, maybe not the better passer than Martinez, but gives them more. I think that, as I mentioned before, they'll run up the score if they get a chance. So I'm going to go with Nebraska. All right.
When does Adrian Martinez hit the transfer portal?
I would have thought already, but you got to give him some credit. He seems to be taking it as well as you can.
I think he's a good guy. I mean, I do. Yeah. And like I sat in on those interviews the week that Wisconsin was supposed to play them, and he seems like a really smart guy, a team guy, likes McCaffrey. So, you know, that was probably a snarky comment that I didn't need to make, but I do think there's talent there.
I was going to say it's probably after the season.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think he's got a chance to play somewhere, and I think he's probably just needs a different fit at this point.
Yeah. All right. So then Michigan is going to Rutgers. Michigan is a 10-point favorite on the road. I'm going with Rutgers because I like how Schiano's team plays defense and that they do some crazy stuff every now and again. I think that's going to be enough to cover the 10. I don't think they're going to win. I think Michigan, this is a must win. Like Harbaugh gets fired on the tarmac if they don't win type of game, but yeah, exactly. But I think Rutgers does enough to keep it close and cover the 10. So I'm going with them.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm putting any faith in Michigan to cover a double-digit spread after the way they played last week. You talk about Penn State quitting. There seems to be a lot of quit on that Michigan team. They haven't announced that they're going to change quarterbacks, correct?
No, it was open competition this week, but I don't know what Joe Milton could do in practice to override what Cade McNamara did on game day Saturday.
Yeah, I thought McNamara looked really, really good in limited action. Some of those, like Joe Milton's interception to Chanel, like I don't know what he was doing there. Even if he didn't see Chanel, that pass probably would have been picked by whoever was the defensive back covering the play. It was behind the receiver. It was just five yards short.
Like it was either getting picked by another defensive back or skipping to his receiver. So that's going to be in the story about the pass rush. Nick Herbert got some pressure on that play and didn't get contact, so didn't get credit with a quarterback hit or anything, but it affected the play. So it's one of those examples of the pass rush impacting the defense without getting a sack. But either way, horrendous.
How was your experience at Michigan Stadium, by the way?
Awesome, because there wasn't 100,000 people to fight through. It was easy. It was like the parking lot was right next to the stadium. It's really nice. Couldn't have asked for more.
Did we go there last year?
No, I was here.
Okay. So you didn't, you haven't covered a game. That was your first time covering a game there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not one of the better stadiums in terms of getting from the press box to post game. You do have to fight through a lot of people. So yeah, that was a good situation not to have fans there for you.
Yeah, it worked out. All right, so now we're at the Wisconsin game here. Wisconsin going to Northwestern. Wisconsin is a 7.5-point favorite, which is a little bit high, but I'm still going with Wisconsin because I think that this is a huge Graham Mertz game. I think they make it hard to run the ball, and I think that Graham Mertz throws it around and kind of exposes some of these things in the Northwestern's back end that they haven't had to or haven't been exposed to yet. So I'm going with Wisconsin covering the 7.5.
And here's my switch. I originally had Northwestern, but I want to switch to Wisconsin. This was kind of the case last week and I didn't pull the trigger, but in talking through the game on the podcast, I started to doubt my Michigan pick and probably should have changed and then looked like a complete moron because Wisconsin goes out and wins 49-11 or whatever. That's kind of how I feel talking about this game is I just think Wisconsin's going to win this game semi-comfortably. And I don't think Northwestern is going to be able to score enough points. Yes, that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to move the ball at times. I don't think they're going to be able to score touchdowns necessarily. I think they're going to have to settle for field goals. So I don't see them getting over, say, 17 points, 16 points in this game. And I think Wisconsin's going to score, you know, enough. Like a 27-17 game or 27-16 game seems like how it's going to play out. I kind of, the reason I picked Northwestern is because I've been at this game. It seems like, yeah, I've been at this game for 20 years where you think Wisconsin's going to win comfortably. And then it's a gloomy day and Northwestern keeps it close, wins the game. And you walk out of there thinking, what just happened? But I just think it's different this time, and that's why I'm changing. I think Wisconsin's going to cover.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, so we'll keep track of it and let you guys know how we did next week. As we start getting toward the end of the show here, let's talk about some basketball, Jim. We mentioned it a few times, but supposed to be games starting next week, with the day before Thanksgiving is the season opener, next Wednesday. I guess let's start with that. I mean, we're talking Wednesday morning, like we said, so by the time you hear this, there should be a basketball schedule out. The non-conference games have already kind of been leaking out from the other schools. Like, you know, we've got certain, like Green Bay, they're going to play, and Marquette, obviously. Just as you kind of look through at least the non-conference part, let's start there. Like, what's the most exciting game for fans to kind of look forward to?
Well, probably the Marquette game, as usual, is the one that I'm going to be most interested in. It's a Marquette post Marcus Howard world. So I'm interested to watch that one. It's not a great non-conference schedule, and that's not a rip on anybody. I think they had to kind of find games against teams that are close to home, and yeah, you know, they're not going to bring in a lot of big time opponents. They have Louisville at home in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. I was really disappointed that ended up being Louisville. I kind of thought all summer that it was going to be North Carolina. And then North Carolina ends up playing Iowa. Louisville's, you know, I think picked fifth in the ACC. What's that?
Who's Duke play?
Duke.
Yeah, Michigan State?
Maybe Michigan? I don't know. Good question. Okay. I don't know. It's a home game. And part of matching up the ACC Big Ten challenges, if a team was at home last year, they're going to get a road game this year, and vice versa. That almost always happens. So I kind of knew Wisconsin was going to get someone coming off a home game. And North Carolina and Louisville were kind of the best options. And it ends up being Louisville. Like I was going to say, they're picked to finish fifth. So, you know, it's probably an NCAA tournament team, but they lost a lot. And it's just not the marquee matchup that I was kind of hoping for. You know, Wisconsin was supposed to open the season last week against Tennessee. Yeah. Which would have been like a number 7 versus number 12 game. What a bummer that game doesn't get played this year, because I think it would have been a really good one to open the season with. As of right now, next week, they're going to open against Eastern Illinois, Arkansas Pine Bluff. You mentioned Green Bay, Northern Iowa. Northern Iowa is actually a sneaky good game. That team was like 25-6 last year, mm-hmm, and has a lot of key guys returning. So that's a tough game. But the real meat of the schedule, as usual, is going to be the Big Ten, which is going to be really good again this year. I mean, it's got three top 10 teams, I think 7 in the top 25. So it's, you know, I'm anxious to see kind of how the schedule plays out there.
Yeah. And getting into that a little bit, you mentioned three top 10 teams. Wisconsin ends up getting picked to finish third. Was that the media and Big Ten poll, or what was that?
That was the media. The Big Ten doesn't do an actual official poll anymore.
Okay.
So like basically there's 28 of us beat writers around the league that a couple guys have formed this group and collect votes every year. So I'm glad they do. It's a pretty good system.
Yeah. So Illinois gets picked to finish first. Then you've got Iowa, then Wisconsin finished third. Just what was your reaction when you saw that, when you consider the fact that not only did Wisconsin, you know, win a share of the Big Ten Conference regular season championship last year, but then really only lost one major contributor?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know where Wisconsin was going to pick. I thought first, second, or third, it could have been any of those three. The thing that surprised me off the bat was that of the 28 of us that voted, 16 voted for Illinois, and then 6 apiece for Iowa and Wisconsin. I thought those would be more evenly distributed. I really did. I was surprised that Illinois got so many of them, and that's the reason why they're first. I get it. Illinois's got, you know, we also for that poll did our top 5 picks for preseason All Big Ten, And I didn't vote for two Illinois players, but two Illinois players ended up on that team. Ayu Dosunmu, who's an NBA prospect, decided to come back. And Kofi Coburn, who's a 7-foot center, who was the Big Ten Freshman of the Year. So I guess when a team has two of the top five players in the league, you can understand why people would think they're going to win the league. I totally get it.
Sure.
And they've added some pieces, transfers and freshmen, that I think will make this more of a well-rounded team. It wasn't a good shooting team last year at all, but they added some shooters, and I think that'll only help Dosunmu and Coburn. So I understand it. I get it why Illinois is picked to win the league. They were only one game out of the three-way tie for first last year.
Right.
You figure they're going to get better, so I get it. That said, I picked Wisconsin, and it probably sounds a little bit like a homer pick, but my rationale was pretty simple. They've got almost everybody coming back from a team that was really playing well at the end of last year. This disjointed offseason, I think, is only going to help a team that has experience and
yep.
chemistry. Not only help, I should word that differently. I think if anyone's going to get hurt by this disjointed offseason, it would be a team that doesn't have as much experience as Wisconsin, right?
I mean, yeah, it's kind of the same thing we've been talking about all year with football. I mean, the continuity they had. Brad Davison and Nate Reavers don't need to run a bunch of pick and rolls in practice to get their chemistry down. They know it. They've been doing this.
Right. Yeah. And so that was my rationale. And I think they're going to, I also think they have something to play for. They were, they were bummed that they didn't get a chance to play the postseason last year. So I think they come in here hungry. And I think they're going to, they want to win back-to-back Big Ten championships. That would be quite an accomplishment. That was my rationale, but I can honestly see them finishing first, second, third. I actually picked Iowa fourth, and I think Iowa in the AP poll is the highest ranked of the Big Ten teams.
Yeah.
But to me, this program has never shown it can play defense, and you've got to play defense to win in a 20-game Big Ten schedule.
Sure.
I could see Iowa making a Final Four run because they are so they've got so much offensive talent that they can get hot and make a run to the Final Four. But to do it over 20 games in the Big Ten, I'm skeptical that can happen. And that's why I picked Iowa fourth. I picked Michigan State ahead of them. Michigan State lost their two best players, but they still have Tom Izzo. They still have a lot of talent. They've won at least a share of three Big Ten titles. I wouldn't be surprised if they find a way to win or tie for another one. So
right.
It's going to be a good race. I'm anxious to kind of watch it play out.
I think something that's, I don't know if what the right word for it is, like, not, I wouldn't say overlooked, but the fact that Micah Potter gets to, get warmed up and get kind of ready to play the conference season against non-conference opponents, as opposed to having to wait till January like you had to last year. I think that's huge, because you could argue that Micah Potter was, one of the probably second or third most important guy on the floor when he was out there last season, down the stretch at least. I mean, just because his ability to shoot, defend, I mean, rebound. I mean, he's a guy that is a game changer. And then the fact that you've got two of them with him and Reavers, you wrote it in one of your preview pieces kind of about, maybe playing them together a little bit more. I kind of like it where you've always got one of those guys on the floor, one on the bench to just stagger those minutes. So you've always got a talented 7-footer out there. But I just think that him being available the whole season and, really ingrained in this team now is huge. I think he's going to have a monster season.
No, that's a great point. They were 16-5 with him in the lineup.
Yeah, last year. Right.
I mean, that's not a coincidence. He helps them in so many ways. And you said that he was, what number is he in terms of importance on the team? I think there were nights where he was the most important player. And I think one of the beauties of this team is not knowing who the best player is, and that showed in this polling. Nate Reavers was a first team, all preseason pick in this poll. I didn't vote for any Wisconsin players because I had a hard time deciding who I put on there. Is it Reavers?
Yeah.
Is it Potter? Is it Demetric Trice, who was playing really well at the end of the year? And you know what? I think Liam Ford's going to make a big jump this year. I towards the end of last season, he was playing really good, and I think he's got another step to go. So again, I'm a little bit biased because I see this team on a night in and night out basis. So I can understand why my view of this team is different from a beat writer from Michigan or Michigan State or Penn State or whatever. But I still think this team has another level it can go to, and we'll see if that plays out that way this year. But I'm not expecting them to disappoint. I don't think the last eight games last year were a mirage. They shot the ball really well in those games, and they didn't shoot the ball well early in the season. I'm more inclined to believe that this is a good shooting team than a really poor shooting team.
Right.
And maybe it's somewhere in the middle, but I think it's closer to a really good team than the one that couldn't make a shot out in Brooklyn.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, you'd think, like, if Greg Gard could draw up his ideal roster, it would be this, you know, diversity of athleticism and different types of players and everything like that. But then he's got 7 to 8 guys that can score 12 to 15 points a night. And that's kind of their system. That's kind of what their identity is every guy they put on the floor can score on their own, essentially, or has the ability to shoot. And that's kind of quintessential Wisconsin basketball, I feel like, the way that this roster is constructed.
Yeah, I referenced this last year, but it's quintessential Platteville basketball. This is some of Bo Ryan's championship teams were exactly like this, where they, nobody averaged over 12, 13 points a game, and they had 6 or 7 guys in that 7 to 12 to 13 range. It's just so hard to defend. And the one guy we haven't mentioned that I'm really anxious to see how he fits is Johnny Davis. I really wanted to see him in the scrimmage. And one of the biggest reasons I'm disappointed that they didn't show the scrimmage is I wanted to see how Johnny Davis fit, because if there's a missing piece on this roster, it's a guy like him that can get to the rim and make things happen. And if he's surrounded by 4 shooters, where it spreads out the defense, can a guy like him attack the creases and get to the rim? I'm anxious to see where he fits and whether he can, you know, be the guy that makes his team even more dangerous offensively. And, you know, he plays defense. That's the thing. He's a two-way player, and they really liked him out of high school because of that. He's willing to defend. He's an eager defender. So would not be surprised if he's a guy that contributes and plays a lot of minutes this year.
Absolutely. All right. Well, as we wrap up the show here, make sure you are on Madison.com checking out all these stories. Jim's got a bunch of basketball stuff coming up in the next week or so. And then we've obviously got a huge football game on Saturday at Northwestern. Jim and I will both be there at Northwestern on Saturday. So make sure you're following us on Twitter. CBARWSJ for me, Jim Polzine, WSJ for Jim. This is exciting, man. I mean, it's going to be a weird sprint down the rest of the calendar year here, but this is going to be fun.
I told my wife, we have a calendar at home, like the actual calendar you write on. And I finally gave her the go ahead yesterday to write the basketball games on for next week. And all of a sudden you look, I have games next Wednesday. And Thursday's Thanksgiving. There's a game scheduled for Friday basketball. There's a football game scheduled for Saturday. This is the time of year where my seasons kind of overlap, and I like it. I really do. I mean, it gives you more to write about, and it gives you more information about the team. I'm starving for information about the basketball team, because I haven't seen one.
Yeah, usually you've seen like a dozen practices or so at this point, right?
And a red-white scrimmage and something to kind of give you a taste of what it's going to be like. I'm starved because I haven't seen anything. So I'm anxious to get this season going.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week.